I speak to you in the name of the Son of Man. Amen. The last time my friend Edward T. Bear, you might know him as Winnie the Pooh, or just Pooh. The last time Pooh showed up during Advent, he and John the Baptist had met by accident under the honey tree beside the Jordan River. It was during that lazy afternoon that Pooh learned that a bath could make you clean inside. And John discovered Pooh's love for honey, and John loved honey. Just before they parted, as the late afternoon sun kaleidoscoped the river surface and made the world seem shimmery, and you know Pooh likes shimmery things, John asked Pooh what was his most favorite thing in all the world. "Eating honey," hiccuped Pooh, mouth and paws still a little sticky from his earlier snack. But then he stopped, and he got a kind of curious look on his face, and he said, "No, there's a moment just before you begin to eat honey that is better than eating it. I don't know what to call it, but that moment is the best thing in life." I wish Pooh were here this morning, because he would know how to help me tell time. If Pooh were to give his version of St. Paul's letter to the Romans, were to come across these words, "You know what time it is, how it is now the moment for you to wake from sleep," Pooh would know what to call that moment. I wish I had a word for Paul's moment, because it would let me in on the secret of this season of Advent. I do know what it's like to be on the threshold between sleeping and waking. It's a strange and boundaryless time when the creatures who inhabit my dreams hurry to their daytime hideout, and the oak branches outside my bedroom are still a blur. My wife and I set our clock for a ridiculously early time, and then we punched the snooze button many times. We also set our clock fast so we could fool ourselves into thinking that we have more time to sleep. There may once have been a time in my life when my eyes popped open and my legs swung out of bed and I jumped up wide awake. But that time is long gone. But it is now the moment for us to wake from sleep. And before we can wake up, we need to make our way out through the twilight or this dawn between our dreams and the bright light of day. This is a great season. Advent is a great season of dreamers. Its main characters all dream. Strange, irrational, unpredictable dreams. Isaiah, a man of some substance, with personal access to the king, letting loose these dreams of peace. John the Baptist, thundering out a wild-eyed message of judgment, dreaming of a world that is changed. Mary, dreaming of Emmanuel. And each of them surely wondered at times if they were dreaming or awake. When Isaiah listened to the distant sound of swords and spears changing shape and purpose, when John watched for the inner cleansing that Pooh found so amazing, when Mary couldn't get the messenger out of her memory or his words out of her mind, they all must have wondered if they weren't still half asleep. In this time of the year, Christians have sung of the coming of Messiah. We have offered litanies of hope and peace. We have proclaimed the coming of the day of the Lord, and we have prayed for the peace of Jerusalem. And we have done so in a world of madness and warfare. In the light of day, we can see the brutal and relentless shredding of Syria, the waste of lives and hope. When we are wide awake, we can hear the last cries of faraway lives in Afghanistan. With our eyes wide open, we can witness nations still lifting swords against other nations. But now is the moment between sleep and awake, and just for this day, we can allow ourselves to linger there and dream and hope and imagine. For this is a season of imagination. If we cannot imagine peace, we will kill ourselves. If we cannot imagine justice, we will still oppress and suffer. If we cannot imagine light, we will welcome the darkness. 121 years ago, last Friday, a boy was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland. He was given the cumbersome name of Clive Staples Lewis. As a boy, he lived in a depressing home, out of reach of a distant father, frightened and saddened by a mother who died much too soon. So Clive's and his older brother found solace in the nooks and crannies of this large house. To escape the dreary daylight, they imagined worlds far off, creating languages and people out of nothing. When he grew up, this child of dreary Belfast, with a cumbersome name, became a good scholar and a fine writer. Eventually, he spent his life at Oxford and Cambridge, writing literary criticism and teaching English. C.S. Lewis became Jack to his close friends, and life settled into the most ordinary regimen and routine. But into this ordinary daylight, the moment before waking was insinuating itself, and on his way to the zoo one day, C.S. Lewis experienced divine presence on the bus. He was surprised by joy, as he put it, and he came to understand that the ordinariness of life is permeated by glory. He went on to be such an apologist for the Christian faith that 50 million copies of his books are in print more than 50 years after his death. C.S. Lewis wrote theology, he wrote satire, he wrote personal memoirs, he wrote essays of many kinds, but perhaps his greatest work came out of the imagination of that small boy in the large Belfast house. In the Chronicles of Narnia, Lewis displayed a world beyond and within this world, inhabited by lions and witches, dwarves and talking animals and trees. This imaginary world, which you could only reach through a wardrobe or by falling into a spring, is a moral world, lacerated by sin and transformed by sacrifice. But on this first Sunday of Advent, when the church has brought us to the threshold between sleep and waking, when our dreams threaten to abandon us as the morning fog escapes the earth, when Jesus is near and Jerusalem is calling, perhaps we need the gift of the English curmudgeon who imagined and tasted glory. Poe would have loved C.S. Lewis. Oh, he'd have loved C.S. Lewis. He'd have called him Jack, introduced him to Piglet, Tigger, Eeyore, and all the rest. He'd have wanted to know all about Jack's pipe and what went on with the Inklings at their Tuesday night gatherings. And Pooh would have recognized Narnia in a flash, because Pooh knew that disasters often create new friendships. Pooh believed that sadness can be vanquished by honey. And Pooh would have wanted to go with the children as they entered the stable at the end of the story and discovered a richer and more real Narnia inside. Every entrance into Narnia had seemed like a dream, and their coming back to England always made them wonder which land was real. Lucy and Edmund and Susan and Peter and all the rest are children of the twilight or dawn. They are allowed entrance into a place where the night is far gone and the day is near. Pooh was very excited. Got to tell you, I was just speaking with him the other day. He's very excited. This is the moment of the Lord's appearing. Yes, I know Jesus insists that we should keep awake. But with all due respect to the Lord, let us pause just for today at the moment before awaking to succor our dreams one last time, to be caught back into our hopes once more, to imagine our swords making the earth fruitful and our spears tending the garden of the Lord. Stay just a bit with me. I promise you, we'll be fully awake when, ironically, we come together in the middle of the night to greet the Messiah. Amen.
together with Christians around the world.